Looking ahead, challenges and opportunities in the changing world. Welcome to Talking Economics, a podcast by the Center for Economic Research and Graduate Education, Economics Institute. The Central and Eastern European region has undergone significant socioeconomic transformation following the fall of communism in the late 80s and early 90s and its consequent European Union accession. What are the main challenges for the region economies now with respect to the current changes in the world? In today's episode, we will discuss insights on the economic performance of the Central and Eastern European region with Katarzyna Rzentarewska. Katarzyna is a SERGI alumna and the chief CE macro analyst at Erste Group in Vienna. At Erste Group's research team, she analyzes and comments on macroeconomic developments in the CE region with a focus on the regional view and cross-country analysis. Welcome, Kasia. So, Kasia, at first, I would like you to maybe explain the focus of your work or the scope of the work. And I would like to ask you to define the region, because CE is a broad definition. So if you could specify maybe closer, which countries are you working with?
At Erste Bank, we define our region as CE8. So these are the Visegrad countries, the Visegrad 4, Poland, Czechia, Slovakia, and Hungary. But also we include analysis about Romania, and we cover some countries like Croatia. In our Zagreb office, our analysts also take a look even at Montenegro or Bosnia and Herzegovina. So this is how we think about the region. Mostly we look at the macroeconomic developments, how the countries perform year-on-year basis, so the economic growth, the inflation that has become a really important and hot topic most recently, but we also go beyond this as we take a look at the structure of the economies, about the convergence, about the underlying issues that are challenges for these economies, but also we take a look at these things that go well.
Perfect. And these are exactly the things that I would like to hear more about. Usually we perceive quite a lot of differences among our countries, right? Czechia is very different from Slovakia in many ways, and Poland and everything. So could you maybe highlight the common aspects and the convergence? Are we converging, or are we still very heterogeneous, or what are the trends? What is the status?
So despite the fact that we look at all these countries as the region itself, the countries within the region remain very, very heterogeneous. Starting with the convergence that you mentioned, the pace of convergence has been very much different. Most recently on social media, there is quite a popular map showing by how much real GDP has changed in Europe versus US. And obviously our region is highlighted with Poland being the leader, growing more than 170% from 1995. Obviously with Czechia or Slovakia having a slower pace, but that's also related to their starting point, right? So Czechia and Slovakia were in a different place also in 1990. Particularly Czechia was much richer, and therefore naturally the pace of convergence is slower. This is also something what we have been seeing, that the catching up process has naturally slows. It's still present. The countries in the region still grow faster than the Eurozone, but in general, the pace of convergence has been slowing, which is exactly according to all the economic textbooks. So if you look it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you say that the countries are still remaining very heterogeneous. So what are the main differences, would you say, or what are there some commonalities that we can look at or that you observe?
So looking at the common things, all of the countries in the region joined the European Union. They deepened their integration. However, the pace of the integration is very much different. Slovakia is already in Eurozone for more than a decade. Croatia just joined the Eurozone. On the other hand, Czech Republic or Poland are nowhere close to go that way. And as mentioned, the economies itself has a very different structure. When you take a look at Czech Republic, Slovakia or Hungary, these are very small, open economies, export oriented. When you take a look at Poland and Romania, these are much bigger countries with much bigger internal market. So export import do not play as big role as in case of Slovakia or Czechia, but the growth drivers are different. So the structure of the economies also are related to how well or not well countries do during shocks or crises, and how they are affected. So it's all connected. On the one hand, the region is part of European Union, and obviously the integration takes place. But on the other hand, the structure of the economies are sometimes so distinctive that allow for a different performance. So even looking back to 2009, Poland was called the Green Island back then. It was the only country that avoided the recession, while Slovakia or Czechia were hit much more.
Okay, thank you. You talked about the structure and how these countries have different responses, or how they react differently to crises, which is exactly what we are going through, right? We've been through turbulent times, first the pandemic, and now we have the war in Ukraine, which is right at our borders. So how is our region dealing with these challenges?
Well, the recent couple of years were indeed a very challenging and unexpected event happened. So first the pandemic, and I believe no country in the world was prepared for that. And once the pandemic ended, and it already seemed that the economies started to recover and get a good pace of growth, and the optimism was growing. The war in Ukraine began. So there is a crisis after the crisis. Obviously, giving the proximity to the Ukraine, Poland, Slovakia, or Czechia are also differently impacted than the Western countries. So from that perspective, already when we look at the flow of migrants, this has been a huge challenge in front of Poland, Slovakia, but also Czechia welcomed a very high share of their population of Ukraine migrants. So this is something what particularly touches our region, the economies in the region. Obviously bringing both benefits and challenges. Benefits, we can recognize the impact, the positive impact from flow of Ukraine migrants on the labor market. On the other hand, the challenges related to their integration to the economies, to the education system, or to the healthcare system may only highlight the already existing problems within these sectors, within these economies.
And can you tell us more about how our various countries are succeeding or failing in addressing these challenges? Are there some countries which were better in, working with the migrants and working with responding to the fact that we lost or stopped using the natural resources from Russia?
So, in terms of, Ukrainian migrants or refugees, Poland was most exposed at the beginning as they faced a huge flow of people that needed to be accommodated. They obviously moved farther, for example, to Czechia. All of these countries, I believe, tackled quite well the inflow of such amount of people. Poland very quickly get them the possibility to get the status of the citizen, so to get their personal number that obviously is needed for further bureaucracy for finding the work. Poland is a huge market, and they absorbed more than 500,000 of Ukrainian workers, and the unemployment rate remained quite low. So that only shows the need also for the migrants and how can they support the economies. Pretty much the same thing happened in Czechia. Slovakia also made a relatively high flow of people, but not to that extent. As for tackling other impact of the war, when the war began, obviously all the economic forecasts of economic growth of GDP were revised downward. There were huge worries that the proximity of war will impact mainly the region, that we will see maybe a recession or a major slowdown. These worries has not materialized. The region performed very well. The countries kept growing throughout 2022, which probably to some extent could be seen as a surprising. But it's worth to remember that after the COVID, the economies were speeding up in the recovery process, and also people were hungry for utilizing services and something what they were bent to do for roughly 2 years. So that definitely was a positive factor helping to overcome the impact of war. The flow of migrants also impacted private consumption and retail sales performance. These were not only refugees who just came to the country and needed to buy food or basic stuff. It's also the help that people in Poland or in Czechia or in Slovakia provided to the Ukraine. So that was kind of a positive surprise effect. I believe that the major negative surprise is that the inflation surged so incredibly. And here, if we are thinking about the region began with monetary tightening much, much sooner than the Western economies. So they were very prompt and very aggressive. It has obviously positives and negative side of that. Positive is that the approach to tackle the surging inflation was very prompt. On the other hand, obviously, the high interest rates and high inflation environment impacted the households, and obviously the low income families the most. So here, the countries also responded in a different way with different programs, but many of the governments proposed packages that helped to tackle the high energy costs, that provided support to companies. Hungary was here an exception because they quite early introduced the price caps, for example, for fuel. On the one hand, it helped them to keep the inflation low at the beginning, and the costs were quite low, but it backfired as at one point when they needed to finally release the caps, the inflation surged even higher. So, as in every situation, as in every crisis, some outcomes can be predictable, and some or part of the impact cannot be fully associated, especially Russia used the gas and oil imports as a negotiation technique. It impacted the energy prices. It impacted also the food prices, as Ukraine is a major exporter of grains, for example, and we all pay the price. Here, maybe I can also mention that CE region is impacted to much greater extent than the Western economies, especially if we look at the food inflation. It is much, much higher compared to the Western countries. The impact, particularly in that area, is felt to much a great extent in the region than in the rest of the Europe.
Mm-hmm. I would like to go back to the question of energy prices, because when the war started and the prices jumped so incredibly, there were a lot of fears about the expectations of the impact, and the predictions were very bleak. So what would you say now about the developments? Because it seems that the predictions actually didn't turn out exactly as it looked like, which is great, of course.
The energy prices, in particular like electricity prices, skyrocketed in the summer. And this was a combination of factors. It was not only the impact of the war or the limited gas supply. It was also the impact of weather, of the climate conditions. In particular here, the trouble in France when the rivers dried and the nuclear power plants needed the water to cool down the reactors, and then not enough power was generated, then obviously when the supply is limited, the price goes up. So that was also unfortunate combination of the factors. At the top of that, there were growing worries and uncertainty driving the price up, how the Europe will survive the winter if Russia stops the gas supplies, whether there will be a major recession. The storage was built. European Union as a whole responded and set the limit and the timing by when the storages must be full. On the other hand, there was also a saving on gas consumption. So we could see that obviously it's not only in the region, but across the Europe that countries complied with the reduction of gas consumption requirement. And that obviously helped to keep the storage relatively high and full. And once the worries and uncertainty faded, and it was pretty clear that Europe will most likely even avoid the recession, the weather conditions changed, then the gas and electricity prices went substantially down, and they are at the very low and actually pre-war level already at the beginning of the year. So this is something what allows us to expect that the situation at the inflation front, if I may call it that way, will stabilize this year. That will help inflation to go down and to improve also the conditions and the expectations of households and of the economies.
Yeah, speaking about the inflation, there are two countries three countries in your region which have euro, right? So their monetary policy is, say, limited. Do you see any differences in addressing the inflation between the countries which do have euro and the ones that have their own currencies?
Yes, so the biggest difference is that Czechia, Poland and Hungary began with monetary tightening much, much earlier than Eurozone. Obviously, Slovakia back then, Croatia was not in the Eurozone in 2022 yet. So Slovakia and Slovenia were obviously dependent on the ECB decisions. So the monetary tightening came much later. On one hand, these countries that have a flexible exchange rate and independent monetary authorities could react to the situation much earlier, and they could design their response, particularly to the conditions that they see in the country. We have to remember that the exchange rate development also plays a role and is a factor that central banks consider. Maybe they do not impact the exchange rates in a direct way, but definitely they take a look at the development. And here the best example is Hungary, with Hungarian forint that depreciated quite substantially last year, and it has been depreciating very fast in the autumn. It made Hungarian Central Bank to respond with an emergency rate hike, putting the interest rate as high as 18%. So they are more flexible to react to the changing conditions that those countries that are in the Eurozone, where the European Central Bank undertakes the decision.
Mm-hmm. And were these policies effective? So did the independent policies manage to curb the inflation in a more effective way than the countries which were members of the Eurozone? Slovakia and Slovenia at the time we were speaking?
So it's hard to evaluate because these countries have also different conditions, and because different factors also play the role. For example, the food inflation that I mentioned is much higher in the whole region than it is in the Eurozone. So obviously, the European Central Bank policy has one policy and it has to fit all. So it is definitely more difficult to have one policy to fit all very much different countries than having independent monetary authorities that have to fit only one particular country. Surprisingly, the inflation is much lower in Western Europe. So they do not face as high and has double digit inflation dynamics as the region was facing in the second half of the year. It is though hard to tie it only to the monetary policy response. I will leave it that way. It goes also, like, you know, a bit political. That's a side comment, obviously. But it's also hard to enhance. There are, now we can maybe use that word, that it's hard to evaluate, because, for example, food inflation was much more dynamic for the region, so the inflation is higher here. Also, this happens because there is a different structure of the inflation baskets. In a kind of natural way, the countries in the region are also, like, poorer than the Western economies. So the share of the consumption basket spent on the food items is much bigger also. So for example, the food inflation is something what particularly is distinctive between the region and the Western economies. So in that terms, the prompt response of independent monetary authorities could be more effective than, for example, as opposed to Slovakia, which depends on European Central Bank decision and faces the dynamics of food inflation the same as the region. But the problem is very complex. It's only one factor. These are not all the factors that can outweigh the effects of monetary policies.
You understand I'm in the Czech Republic, right? And the discussion about the euro adoption has been eternal. And now it seems that it's actually providing additional arguments for staying independent. But yes, I wanted to hear if how did Slovakia handle these things. And if we maybe can go a little broader or take the question in a more general way. Slovakia adopted euro in 2009, right? So 5 years after entering the European Union, they adopted the euro. We've had, well, nearly 15 years of history here. So are there any analysis that would say, okay, here are strong economic reasons for adopting the euro, and we can see at the case of Slovakia that it was a wise decision, or what would be the assessment?
Well, first of all, let me underline that having euro being a part of Eurozone is a purely political decision. Obviously, it is tied to the performance of the economies. First, countries need to meet so-called Maastricht criteria. So at this point, with inflation going close to 20%, probably Czechia, Poland, or Hungary will not even meet the Maastricht criteria. The public debt and deficit figures also suffered during the pandemic. First, you need also to take a look at that. Once you meet the Maastricht criteria, you also have to then follow the period of fixing the exchange rate. So it's quite a lengthy process, but at the beginning and maybe also at the end of that, there is a need for a political will and a political decision that this is the path the country wants to take. As the case of Croatia, that was quite fast in adopting euro. It joined in January 2023 with becoming a member of European Union much later than Visegrad 4, for example. The decision is always complicated because it's have its cost and benefits. We have been talking about the independent monetary policy and how it's different compared to the ECB. So this is something what the countries need to give up when they become the part of Eurozone. They give up the flexible exchange rate that may be seen as an effective channel, also a channel helping to reach the goals of monetary authorities. And here let's come back to Czech Republic that was using unconventional exchange rate floor to back then come out or help the country to fight deflationary pressures. The decision needs to be taken overall. Obviously, there are fears related to adopting the Eurozone, and probably the biggest fear is the inflation. Now when we take a look at Croatia and this couple of months, even in the environment or the latest surging inflation numbers, Croatia did not do worse than other countries. On the contrary, at the beginning of the year, the inflationary pressure have been easing. Mm-hmm. As for the evaluation of the impact of adoption euro in Slovakia, here we haven't done the analysis ourselves. So I strongly believe that the best is to relate to Institute of Financial Policy in Slovakia. They have done the assessment using a model, a synthetic control, when they try to mimic how the Slovak economy would develop if it wouldn't adopt the euro. And when the analysis was done, the message was quite clear and quite positive that Slovakia did much better with common currency. Obviously, it also depends probably on the time of the adoption, how the country performed, whether the external factors were favorable or not. So this is complex decision and belongs to politics.
Absolutely. Thank you. We've talked quite a lot about the challenges of the region and many things that we're facing, and we're running out of time. So I would like to conclude, Kasia, to balance it out, if you see any opportunities in the future. So speaking about what you see as the opportunities in the region. We usually say that the challenges can be also an opportunity, right? So do you see any opportunities with the labor market, for example?
This is exactly where I'm a bit heading to, and obviously the pandemic and the war are very extraordinary event. and we are living in the extraordinary times. But as you mentioned, these challenges bring probably some opportunities. So with the latest outbreak of the war and the flow of migrants, I am quite strongly convinced and believe that the flow of migrants is positive for the labor markets in the region. The region faces the aging population, so the working population has been shrinking and it will be shrinking. We cannot avoid that. So the flow of migrants definitely helps the labor market, for example, in a better matching. So there are jobs that are filled with Ukrainian refugees that was not that easy to look for an employees within the country's population. The other definitely challenge that not only the region but the whole Europe faces, but the region in particular, is also an energy transition. I think that we can at this point assess that the Europe was a bit lucky, but also managed the situation well with the limited supply of gas from Russia. It found different resources, it limited the consumption, but the need for the energy transition, for the shift to use more renewables, couldn't be much obvious or much clearer than it is now. It is already happening. It will definitely speed up in the years to come. It provides independence, it provides diversity. And the CE region also faces a great opportunity in using the European funds to go through that transition as smoothly as possible. Poland is greatly dependent on the coal. It is also a unique opportunity, probably to force some changes, or maybe introduce the reforms that are not that popular or painful to the society, but also help them to go through these reforms and through that substantial change with European funds.
Perfect, Kasia. Thank you. Thank you for all your insights. I think we could be talking for another hour, but the time is really up. So thank you for being with us and sharing your insights.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a great pleasure.